So the moment I'd pray, like I remember this one, not once, not twice, but let me use this particular example. A guy that I was really into. And I remember I knew that this one, if God does not intervene, but it's a done deal, it's sealed forever.
Was it a mutual? Was it mutual? Was
oh,
it
yeah.
Also? Oh.
I mean, what do you expect? But I, and that made it harder because it's easier to like a guy who didn't like you and you're like, ah, maybe I had God wrong. But this is now, you know, more complicated. So I began seeing images. I'm literally awake. There's nothing, like I'm not sleeping. It's not a dream or anything like that. But every time I think of the guy, I'd see images of him holding me and stabbing me at the back. And he'd wear like a black cape or something. And I'd say, God, what is this I'm seeing? Until someone else came to tell me that this is what they saw about someone who was hugging me. And for me, when I'd see them, I'd see the face, so I'd know who it was.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, God would use stuff like that to confirm to me that, chick, you're heading the wrong direction. So the onus would be on me to cut it off. You know, like the way when God spoke to Abraham and said to him, I want you to sacrifice your
yes,
son.
Yes, yes.
Your only son, the one you love. Not Ishmael, not the one that you just got because... Not those other extra servants who serve you, the one that you love. And again, that was one of the training grounds for me when God would teach me to give up something that I want, you know, so that the enemy, John 14:30, that says that so that when the enemy comes, he finds nothing in you. Like I said, desire is what actually makes you fall. So the moment you're able to sacrifice the thing that you want to God, he'll either give it back to you, but now it has a proper place in your life, or he will remove it. But many of us mess up or go down the wrong way because we deal with a desire too late. Remember I said that for me, the moment I knew I had started having feelings for the guy, before it grows into anything that can be called anything, I run to God. And many times I find myself crying before him, like, Lord, you know my heart. Me, I'm so gone. I really, but I want your will. So he always... You know, he never failed. He always came through.
Thank you for sharing that. That's first of all, I'm glad to know that you are, you know,
human.
Yes, and also that's such a difficult thing. So your vulnerability and honesty in that conversation, I love it because you're literally saying no to that thing that you're praying God, that you're spending hours praying.
Especially
God.
When they check all the boxes. Remember, this is a person. Okay, he's like this. He does this. You know, you are like this, or you know. It's harder when it's exactly what you want. But that's the best kind of sacrifice to give God, because then he knows, you know, because the response Abraham. That God gave to Abraham is like, now I know that you love me. Not before when you were confessing or crying in church, or it's now when you've given up the thing that you want. Now I know that you love me. That's the proof that you love God. Not when everything is nice and rosy and all you're doing is crying and confessing to him.
Okay, I love the thread. And the thing about hearing your story, you see how the dots connect. So you see how you're making this decision now because of things that you were doing previously. Okay, you said there's something that was happening after you transitioned from school. Let's enter that now.
So
did you graduate?
I did.
Okay.
I'll come to that. But I'd like to, I think it was in the last year. I forget when exactly, but I know it was not after 2007, which was when after I had graduated. But it was in the last year or third year when I was in campus. And remember, I had told that God had begun to put it in my heart to pray for the nation.
Yes, yes.
So God tells me, you're going to do this thing of 21 days praying for the nation. In my head, I'm thinking, how? And of course, because of Sita Moodley, you know, there was connections. I spoke to the pastors and they allowed me to use NPC Wood. I mean, Hope FM with James Okumu.
Yes.
And
just in case you don't understand the connection between that, Sita on Hope FM. Yes.
Yeah.
So at that time, NPC.
Yes, NPC Woodley. So I spoke to my pastors and I told them this is what God had been telling me. Now, because I had built credibility with the pastors and they had known me, they had seen God at work in me and all that, they knew by the time I was going to tell them that this is something that God had put in my heart. It wasn't just a flimsy, off the top of my head sort of like thing. So I went, I met with James, we agreed. So the programs used to start at 6 a.m. In Hope FM. So because there was no slot, we said we'll introduce a 5 a.m. slot for those 21 days to pray for the nation. I used to live in Kibera, so I'd come from Kibera all the way to Valley Road every morning to be there on time for 5 a.m. to start the prayer session. I didn't know that there was such a huge following of guys who were actually joining us in prayer for the nation at the time. Now, remember, I'm following God out of obedience, but then he's creating a whole other following online of guys who are actually joining. So by the time we're done with the 21 days, I knew God had done something in me. I knew that I had lived out something out of obedience. Mm. And I remember James wanted to go back to 6 a.m. and he was still, no. We are good with five. Yeah, we start at 5. The rest can join at 6, you know. And that's how Hope FM shifted their program into 5 a.m. because of that experience. But again, for me, these are the kind of things that God has used over time to show me who I am, to keep giving me snippets of, you know, of who I am and what he's doing with me. So that had to do with the nation. So fast forward to I graduate. This is now 2007. Luckily, when I finished, I had a job offer.
You already had a job offer?
I had a job offer.
How did that, what was it and how did that come?
Well, thanks to my mentor at the time.
Uh-huh.
So she had gotten me a job offer or a job opportunity with a certain company. And I had even started working with them, like sort of like part-time in my last, semester. Mm-hmm. Because I had done an accelerated program, so I only had like two classes in that last semester.
Uh-huh.
So I finished. This is now 2007 and 2008. I become Miss Tourism towards the end of 2007. And at the beginning of 2008, God tells me, you're not working.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He says, you're not going to any job. You're not going to work. And he said, you're going to do ministry, which at the time was like worship in church, what I was doing. And then he says, and you're going to model. Now imagine you going to tell your parents that. Everyone is finishing campus with the thought of tamaking or looking for a job. You have a job offer.
You've already started.
And God says, no. You're going to model for the next 1 year and ministry or whatever ministry was at the time. I didn't have a problem with that.
Are you okay? You're okay to...
Remember, rise, kill, eat. It's uh-huh. It's a difference between walking with God and knowing his voice.
Yes.
Versus what will people say?
Uh-huh.
This is the thing that society expects of me. I remember my sister was in the States at the time and my dad called and said, this girl has gone nuts. My mentor summoned me and told me, you're crazy.
Uh-huh.
Everyone was telling me, what the hell? In fact, the words I was being told was, just because now you think you're Miss Tourism, now you're not going to work. You think this is a job. You know, it's gotten to your head. I got all manner of insults and backlash because of that position. And I just knew this is not what God wants me to do.
But that must hurt.
And at the same
now,
time,
this is people who, I don't want to trivialize that emotion.
Yeah.
Because fine, yes, you're confident in what God has told you, but this is your mentor.
They are, and it was painful.
This is your family. These are guys who will be supporting you.
Now remember, 2007 is when the clashes happened.
Yes.
So this is now December going into January. And it's sort of like spilled over into January and February and all that. So at the time, because I was very close with the Wagatas, because we were living in the heart of Kibera, our family was sort of like dispersed, like we all had to look for places to go. Because, you know, when people talk about post-election violence, they have a very different picture of what really happened. They have a CNN picture, many people, let me not say everyone. But I was in the heart of it, you know. You couldn't sleep because you can hear the gunshots and there are people banging your fence and banging your, you know, and just there's a lot of noise and chaos. They're stealing from the shop next door. You don't know whether they'll break into your house, you know. So my dad just figured, okay, you know what? I'll stay back with your mom. The rest of you just find, you know, we're sort of like allocated to different places. So I went to the Wagatas and to this date, I'm grateful to God for them.
Hold on. That is crazy. I didn't even, thank you for bringing that back. During the post-election violence, you were at the heart of it, of course. Kibera, there was a lot of different fighting that happened there. And Raila, it's been sort of taken from him. Kibera was his, not stronghold, I don't know how to use that word, but he was loved there.
Absolutely.
So you had to literally leave where you live.
Yeah.
And go and stay with other people.
Yep. For more than a month. And it was...
And leave your parents at home. So every day there's that, hey, I hope you guys are okay.
Yeah. Thankfully, I mean, because of the community environment, there was a way that things were being, I mean, you're safeguarding each other.
Yes.
But it's your neighbors. It's people who are from around who are angry at the results and therefore demonstrating and doing all sort of things.
Whoa.
But while that was going on.
And this is just after you've prayed for a country.
Or oh, yeah. Was, yes.
So you've got a heart of for this country. You know, all this is tied. Eh?
Yeah.
You've got a heart for this country, and yet the country's burning.
Yeah. So I, at that time, remember there's the pressure. I mean, there's a post-election violence going on.
Uh-huh.
There's a pressure of you've just finished campus, and now you're thinking you've just become Miss Tourism.
Yes.
Right? And then now you've been offered a job, and God says you're not going to work. So there's a lot going on at the same time. And I remember this particular night when, after many interactions with my mentor then, and many people, even the pastors would call me and tell me, are you crazy? Like, have you lost your mind? What's going on? Are you getting that well paid, you know, using this modeling thing? They didn't understand my position. But if God has ever been clear to me, that was one of those moments.
Mm.
I could hear him so clearly. It was those seasons when I wouldn't sleep because his presence was so tangible on me, and I was having experiences with him.
Mm. And
so
and
I remember.
You're telling them.
God, I said, God says I don't work, and they're like, What does that even mean? No one understood what I was saying, and this is now 2007. Mm. And I remember this particular night, I get a text from my mentor, and she says, "See me in the morning. Show up and show up ready to work." And God tells me, go for the meeting. Mm. So, and she said, be here by 8:30. And I was there by 8:30. And I remember sitting across from her at the desk, and God was so clear, you dare not take that job. You will not work for the next 12 months. So I'm here between a rock and a hard place. But for me, the rock and the hard place was all God. This other one was irrelevant in my view at the time. There's just a lot of pressure from everyone else. But in that moment, I looked at her straight and I said, I'm so clear on what God is telling me, not to work for the next 12 months, and that he expects, or rather he wants me to model and to get involved in ministry. Now, remember, I think this person is a pastor, like part-time pastor and part-time, you know, whatever what she was doing. So ideally you'd expect that they would understand. Ideally you'd expect that the people who'd be affirming you are the ones who are nurturing you in your walk with God. And at the time, for me, the Awagatas were more of whatever God tells you to do. We have already seen you do things that we didn't understand, but we figured it was God and we saw it was God. So they were sort of like from that position. But many people, including my parents, including, you know, the people around me, just said, you're crazy. But that day I looked her straight and I told her, this is what God is telling me. And she just told me, okay. And it seems you've made up your mind. I guess you will learn, or you'll figure it. You will experience. You will learn. You know, it's for funzwa now. And that day when I walked from her office and I was walking out of that premise, I had God so clearly tell me, now you're walking in the right direction.
Oh.
Contrary to everything else that everyone was telling me.
Popular belief. Yes.
Contrary to what everyone else was approving, I had him clearly say, now you're walking in the right direction. And I knew I had struck something, and I didn't want to let go of that experience with God. So it only emboldened me.
Yeah, I'm like that. There's something about your character that has definitely not been, but has been formed by him, because you are making an extremely difficult decision by doing that. Mm-hmm. Let me paint a reality. It means you're going to lose some friends.
Mm-hmm.
It means you're going to lose the respect that people may have given you. It means you can lose a mentor. It means there are people who are just waiting for you to fall. And I'm not trying to put down anybody. I'm just talking about the reality that happens when you sometimes, when you sometimes decide to follow God over the popular opinion or the thing that looks good. So what happens now after that?
Okay, first of all, on that note, I think that's what the devil uses to make people not obey God.
Ah.
It's normally a threat. And his threats don't come to pass, and he will only try. But it's when you wilt that what are you really safeguarding? How many, let's say I even safeguarded. Do you know most of those people are no longer in my life right now?
Mm.
So 10, maybe 15 years later, what was I trying to safeguard at that point? And that's the thing that the enemy always tries to make us focus on, to preserve what is inevitably going to pass with time. It will inevitably rot, it will be stolen, it will pass, it will decay somehow. But that's what he makes us focus on and expend our energies on. But then if you follow God, for me, that step was like a step into in the spiritual realm, into a level that I knew God forever secured for me. Because it was like, what I normally say is like he catapulted me, he pulled me back. Because you've advanced in your career, you're almost like, you know, going ahead of your peers, but he pulls you back.
Mm.
But it's that pulling back that if you've done fair, you know, the way we used to, a catapult.
Yes.
It's the further you're
not
pulled
even a
back.
Catapult, like fair.
A fair. The further you're pulled back, by the time that bladder is let go,
yes.
You will even surpass, and which is what happened to me.
Yeah.
When I track my career and my walk with God,
yes.
I know beyond a shadow of doubt that that moment right there was one of the defining moments for me. When I said no to everyone else, or rather many people, and obeyed God, and seemingly lost, but it was only a threat from darkness because. First of all, I didn't lose anyone in that sense because they admire you.
Yes.
Many of them want to do what you want to do, but they don't have the boldness to do it.
Yep.
And they just think, damn, I wish I could do it like you. And they see and they watch God at work in you. And to date, they can actually testify, many of them, that that thing that I did was actually the right thing because I would never have predicted how my life turned out many years later. So do God.
You know, not again to trivialize this, but you didn't do what your parents would have had you do. It's okay sometimes if it's friends and mentors, but when it enters all you've spoken about throughout this whole story from beginning to where we are at right now is the highest praise for your parents. You are entering this adulthood where now you're beginning to make decisions on your own, despite even what the people who brought you to this world and who you have utmost respect for. I'm not trying to say you disrespected them in doing that thing, making that decision. That's still crazy.
Let me tell you what it is, actually. Do you remember when Christ was in the temple at the age of 12? And his response.
Don't you know I would have been in my father's house?
I'm about my father's business. When you have clarity.
Please, this is a 12-year-old telling his earthly father.
Precisely. I mean, it would have been considered rude, you know, dishonor, all that stuff. But in God's eyes, he was actually doing the right thing. And if there's one of the things that I know for sure, if you're genuinely.
I like it. I like your biblical. I would throw them again.
If you're genuinely walking with God, at one point or the other, you will have to disappoint the people who actually speak into your life in terms of the people who expect certain things of you. And it's actually biblical when he says, I didn't come to bring.
Yes, I will separate father and mother.
Precisely.
Brother from, yes.
And when you walk with God, he does sort of like demand on you things that will make you separate. For example, Abraham. The person that we admire and call the father of faith. It all began by God saying, get out of your father's house.
Watch your terror.
Everything that you know. Everything. In fact, I asked this of your father and he didn't do it because the scripture says that God had asked, you know, the father to do it.
For real, that's terror.
Precisely. But this guy, I mean, Abraham comes in, he now fulfills the thing that God had placed a demand on him to have done all this while. So God will place a demand on you at any one point. He will ask you to do stuff that will go against what people approve of. Mm. Whether it's your parents, your friends, your sometimes even your spouse.
Yes.
And that's why I say, God forbid that you should get married to someone who doesn't understand your walk with God or who you've not come into a place of oneness, of actually flowing and knowing that this is what God is asking of us to do. So I would say, if Christ could be able to do it at 12, it will definitely happen to the rest. In fact, in John, I think 14 or 15, he says, if they treated me, who is considered the teacher, like your role model like this, if they hated me, they will definitely hate you. So first of all, you anticipate it. If you walk with God, first of all, it's going to be lonely, and sometimes it's going to be controversial. And then to some extent, you will definitely have to disappoint a lot of people. And you have to be okay with it. Because sometimes that's how he actually opens up new doors for people to see and know, oh my God, this is actually God. So
man, I'm loving this story. Let's take a 2-minute break. We'll be back to continue the story.